Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
You may have been watching for a while now. Now, obviously, this particular matter comes to the fore because there's a very interesting tribunal that's on at the moment, and we've all been watching the importance of an interpretation official and somebody who assists the court sometimes with interpretation services. And so we obviously are watching commentary on how this service actually is beneficial to those who need it and how important it is. Executive Head of Language at the Pan South Africa Language Board, Julius Dantile, is on the line with us to just help us understand the significance of the right kind of interpreter. Thank you very much for making time for us. A very good evening to you, and thank you for your time.
Evening, Pamela, with your career listeners.
Are you concerned about the quality of either translation services and interpretation services, particularly in our court systems?
Yes, we are much concerned about the quality in our court system as the Pan South African Language Board, including, I think, the department that offers those services, the Department of Justice. Because what we see in the current proceedings and in some of the cases that are televised is the tip of an iceberg in terms of what is happening in our court system. Let's take an example of this. I refer it to Section 39 of the Constitution, that one of the requirements for the fairness of a trial is the consideration of the language matter.
Yes.
That the accused must have access to to a language that the accused understand best. And in our courts, we have a situation whereby English is regarded as the language of record, which then creates a twisted process or procedure, which then comes first to say English must be regarded as a language that operates in the court. And then thereafter, all the other considerations for a fair trial should come to the space. And that is problematic on its own. I will start with the small courts or junior courts.
Yes.
Where you probably find in a small town court in Kukumbu or in Vuani, in Mieshe, or in Giani, where all the participants in the court proceedings can speak the same language. But then what then we do to our court system, because of this particular, I'll call it a decree, that the language of record of the court should be English, we start by saying, let's provide interpreting for those particular situations. Now, let me come to these now prominent cases that are looked at and the interpreting that is part of this.
Yes.
On the issue of the quality of those interpreting. I want to start with a concept that most of the people do not understand, or they may not understand until you are part of the interpreters or translation.
Yes.
There is a phrase called, say, I quote, traduttore, traditore.
Yes.
Is an Italian phrase that says that a translator is a traitor. It is not really a traitor in the sense of being a traitor, but it's a traitor that when you translate or interpret, you are taking a message from the sender who's got a particular cultural permutation or that is got it cultural connotations in. You are transmitting into another culture, which is the target language. And those negotiations are critical, especially in context of the message that is being transmitted from the sender to the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately we understand those particular permutations. In translations, where you are writing, translating a document and all that, you have time to go and consult documents on certain concepts, on certain words, dictionaries that are existing, and then you compare the context, and then you say, here is the meaning. But in interpreting, it's an instant moment. It's seconds that you have to transmit what is being said in one language, which is pregnant of a particular cultural connotation, into another language, which then also has got its own cultural connotations, that they may not exist in terms of equivalence. Later on, then, you are going to find that there are legal terms that we have to transmit from, particularly in this case, from English, into either Zulu, Xhosa, and other languages. And what you then find is that we critically look at the interpreters. We look at the mistakes that they make.
Yeah.
Instead of understanding the situation that they are in, of transmitting in seconds and everything is coming from the mind, they have to be eloquent in both languages. They have to understand the legal context that they are in, let alone that they have to transmit this particular language and the proceedings of the court. So it is not a simple job to do. It requires a particular techniques. It requires understanding of semantics, linguistic permutation, grammatical permutation. That is why sometimes you'll find that when people are interpreting, they even continue to interpret and even take the diction of one language, in this instance, for instance, English, and then they transfer it into the target language. One of these examples is, which I can take a simple one from the tribunal.
Yes.
The chair of the tribunal says that, reminds the complainant that you are under oath. And then the interpreter says, uphansi kwesifungo. That is not a translation. That is not really a translation. When you say somebody is under oath in this Xhosa, you say ufungile. You are not under, because now that is a direct transliteration from English into isiXhosa. But in that context, you cannot say that person is wrong, because again, the interpreting process that takes place there, it's intense. It's questions that are coming from a language and from a court process with its own concepts that the interpreter has to deal with those within a second, and that doing a very good job of transmitting the message from one from the sender to the receiver.
What then has to be done about empowering those who sit with these roles, in ensuring that the quality at least improves? And I'm not sure one can say it ever becomes perfect, because language in itself is dynamic. But to, as much as possible, bring it as close as possible to the meaning of what was intended.
One is training. We need to really continuously train our court interpreters. And I know that the Department of Justice is striving to do that. The second one is professionalization, so that you can tap upon talent. There are people who've got a talent, but that talent should then be endorsed with the skills and techniques to really master this particular kind of work. And the last part is that we need to get our languages, which is the previously marginalized languages, the indigenous African languages. We need to see them being used in their own right, not as languages that are under English. Immediately we then do that, sometimes we interpret from English. The whole proceedings are in Siswati. We need to be excited and to have stories about that televised and shown that here is a proceeding in the court in Kwabukweni, where then the magistrate was dealing with this particular criminal case, and the whole proceeding was in Siswati, because all of them could understand the language. And then whatever the interpretation or the summary of the court for the record was done in English, then we are boosting what is called jurisprudency in these particular languages. So it is about the use of the languages in these particular domains that is going to improve the quality thereof.
Well, it's a very noble idea, but we would probably have to start with being able to have the choice to also study the law in indigenous languages, which when it's in itself, you know, is possible. I mean, the Afrikaans people were able to do that, but we've lost that momentum along the way, and so that will be quite difficult too.
Yes, I agree with you that our law schools and our universities should drive this particular training. Remember, at university, you can get a training either in translation or in interpreting, but this should be boosted, this even with the actual lawyers themselves, where then the actual training is taking into consideration the context in which the practitioners are going to be operating. It is really a tragedy that in South Africa you can have a person who completes even a degree without understanding a language that is spoken by the majority of the people in the country, let alone in the context of their operations. African languages are spoken by 70% of the people, and divided mainly into two major language groups, that is isiNguni and Sesotho groupings, with Xitsonga and Tshivenda. So, in essence, what I'm trying to say is that it is a tragedy that our universities still allows that a person can get out of a university training without having communication skills in a particular indigenous African languages. We applaud what was started by KwaZulu-Natal University, University of KwaZulu-Natal, where it made it sure that no one gets a degree without basic communication in Sizulu. That is then endorsing both the youth and the development of a language like isiZulu. So we need to see this taking place across the universities. We need to see also our government using these particular languages, not only in context of courts only, but even in public participation, in speaking by our ministers and all that. What you find in our parliamentary system, in our parliament, is that at the beginning of an administration, we have a hullabaloo about these people that goes there trying to speak these African languages. 6 months down the later, that oomph is gone.
Well,
what causes that? It's because we still have a psychological effect that is living with us as African people, where we see English as a measure of intelligence. And we need to really debate those particular issues, where we say we can be equal, we are equal to all languages are equal and must be served with that particular process. So development and use is intertwined. It's not separated.
Well, in a way, for me, I think we would even have to go a step further. So it's not enough that we even require that people have a basic understanding of, for instance, the language of isiZulu when you're going to be a doctor or a nurse, for instance. What I'm asking is that we have seen that it's possible with language to teach physics, for instance, in a particular indigenous language, where you don't have to make up a word, but a real word exists, for instance, in a particular theory or a theorem. So we are still, you know, fighting to catch up with the basics, whereas we are not really gunning for development of languages, even in technical spaces where you can have a technical word in isiZulu, for instance, or isiTswana, because when you seek, you will probably find that a word like that exists or one can be developed. But we're not even there because we abandon the languages at grade four.
Yes, that is why the Department of Basic Education is rolling out a mother tongue-based bilingual education.
Yeah.
It is going to be a process.
Mm.
What has been a success in the Eastern Cape in terms of that kind of education, and is demonstrated when the Eastern Cape moved from the 40s in terms of its pass rate, becoming the worst in 4 years.
Mm.
And when then they got into matric, the learners, they are taught in both languages. It's Xhosa and also in Sesotho, plus English or Afrikaans. And that has created an environment whereby you find learners that are in the deep rural areas, attending schools in the deep rural areas, but they are able to get 100% in maths and science. Why? It's because they understand the concepts, because they are transmitted in their own language.
Mm-hmm.
What we are still lacking in our, like in this country, is that the matriculants, as I said, 70% of African speakers and learners are still writing matric in English or Afrikaans. And that is a real discrimination that we're faced with. So those kinds of endorsements in society where there's a potential of socioeconomic mobility using your own language need to be emphasized by the state, and they need to be emphasized by government. And also, I'll ask you, for instance, the question, Pamela, are you transacting in the ATMs? Are you translating in your own language?
And absolutely not, many of us would say no.
Because you don't trust your language to that level of transacting it. So what we see transmitting in court, people can comment and say the interpreters are making mistakes here and there. That is a context in which this should be then really exist. However, if you understand the language processes and the use of language, that is not about accuracy, but it's about the transmission, the trust that you can give into that particular language, that it can deliver the message, and all falls into place. So if we can transmit in our own languages, when we get into the ATM, where we are individually not monitored by anybody, but we take a conscious decision to say, I will transmit in my language because I trust the money. I trust that this machine will still give me the money, even if I'm doing it in my own language. We'll then build a psychological boost into ourselves and into who we are, and trusting our own languages, and trusting our own. So it is an issue of trust.
Yeah.
So, for instance, the broader comments that are being made by people, when I look at them in terms of small mistakes or misinterpretations that have been made in terms of this particular course, are not really based on to the transmission of the language, of the message,
Yes.
They are based on to saying, in this language, I understand this, it should be this in the other language. But they forget that the interpreter has to be in the context in seconds to make that particular transmission.
What are the criteria that we have for interpreters to be able to do this work? I mean, is it stringent? Are we getting better at recruiting? What currently is the situation?
I understand that the Department of Justice is embarking on a program of professionalizing court interpreters because they are officers of the court. That is a process of its own. But let's go back to history. In this country, when you talk about translation and interpreting, those from a formal point of view, when the settlers came into the country, they then came in. Then they picked up people that have got a better understanding of what they were saying, and then they started communicating with those people, teaching them how to write and making them creating the languages that we have today. And out of that, certain people accumulated the status of being interpreters. And if you go to the courts, especially under apartheid, it was whether you can speak Afrikaans fluently and the other languages. And then you would then just be picked up without having testing you whether you have the techniques of the context in which you are going to be interpreting. Remember, you can be an interpreter in the community funeral or in a community event or in a just simple event. That is not stringent as when you are in a court process. But what we do sometimes, you just take people because they are fluent in a number of languages and bring them into a very technical highly intense environment and think those people are going to survive. They will not be surviving. So we need to then, as we said, bring the socioeconomic mobility that a person can say, I grew up in Soweto, I speak three languages, or I speak five languages. I want to not just speak these languages. I want to have an ability to write in them. I want to have an ability to understand the cultural nuances in them. I want to have an ability then to be an interpreter across these, but out of the two or three languages that I want to master. And how do we nurture that from school?
Yeah.
And show that being an interpreter is a profession.
Yeah.
That you can make a living out of it. That is a socio-economic benefit that is required. So for us as Pan South African Language Board, it is all about the utilization of the languages to provide socio-economic benefit. And people will then follow out of that.
I mean, you make such an interesting point about, and as I said earlier, you know, language is dynamic because you would have, for instance, let's say Sepedi, spoken in one region as opposed to another, where the same what would be officially termed Sepedi, but with completely different dialects, and the understanding being so different, and regional. Well, I suppose context as well is very important. Where, let's say, for instance, Pretoria, where it's not Spedi, it's not Tswana, it's kind of a Pretoria language kind of mixture, and therefore there would be a dynamic there with how the person who's interpreting what they're hearing would have to, in the context of where this language is spoken, will have to then, let's say they use the word Bushi. Whether it is at night or whether it is in the morning, tomorrow, kabushiu, as they would say in Pretoria. But this kabushiu is only a Pretoria thing, you know, which is a different dynamic to if you had to say it, for instance, in Phalaborwa. And so, there's a lot to be done. There really is.
Yes, there's a lot to be done. Remember, in a language is a social construct that we create by ourselves as human beings in order to do one major intention about it is to send a message to the other, to the receiver on the other side, and the receiver, if it's required, is to also send a message to the other person also. So the critical element of a language is to communicate. Now, when we then get into the issue of standard language, the issue of dialects, we usually call them language varieties. We need to really understand that they are just in most cases. Understood and send the same message, even though they have different tonations or some form of different pronunciations here and there. There are also words that should acquire new meaning, and there are also words in a language that is living that should lose meaning in order for them to be utilized in another context. That is happening in any language.
Yes.
That is why you have South African English. That's why you have American English. That's why You have, even in the United Kingdom, you've got Englishes. You've got English, and then you've got Scottish English, you've got Irish English. So you are bound to have this kind of different nuances. What we as South Africans, and particularly Africans, we have been focused and made to focus on is on the tiny differences. And we want to run with those particular tiny differences instead of us coming together and harmonizing ourselves into the major similarities. So if you take, for instance, the example that you're talking about, the meaning of a word in Pretoria and the meaning of Kushu in Parable, people would understand what is being meant by that particular word. But then, why do we say we want to have and cling into a particular identity that is Pretoria, an identity that is a Parable, or identity that is Sipedi versus Kilopedu and Sipulane and all that? Why do we want to cling onto this particular small ethnic groupings? It is because we have been made to see and look at the differences more than the similarities amongst ourselves. And this is why our conflicts in Africa are emanating from language-related conflicts, and then they go into ethnic conflicts. And then they go, if you go to Somalia, those people speak the same language, Somali. But because they've been made and to understand socialize in such a way that in those ethnic groupings, that is what is important, instead of saying, but we are kind of similar people, we are the same in more or less 90% or 80% of what we are doing. It's only 10% that's making us a difference. And we need to change the mindset and change that paradigm as Africans, using language as a powerful tool to develop us, to unite us. If you, for instance, look at it, you can travel from the top sections of the Eastern Cape using the Sotho-Tswana language, and you can go speaking only that language up to Zambia, up to Malawi. Zambia, the language is called Shilozi. Up to Malawi is called Chinjanya. Up to Tanzania, the language is called Chichewe. So these are similarities of these different languages that you can go across the 16 countries in Southern Africa speaking that particular language, which is the Sotho groupings.
Yeah.
Why are we not fighting for that as Africans? So what I'm trying to say is that we need to then change to make a mind shift and to say, let's look at the similarities more than the differences in order for us to be successful. And that is what we need to drive, and we're driving as a South African Language Board.
Really interesting. Executive Head of Languages at PenSalb, the Pan South African Language Board, Julian Dantile. I'm sure you have a lot to say about that, 086-000-0959. Have you had issue with the interpretation that's been happening with this, they're bringing the point that it's not just with this particular case that we've been watching of Judge President of the Western Cape, but that generally in courts, you know, do you generally find that you have issue with the translation, with the interpretation? Remember that terrible, terrible interpretation that we saw? Was it Mandela's funeral? Remember that? Do you remember that? And I mean, we laugh, but it's detrimental, right? Especially if it's someone who is under oath, if it's somebody who's obviously fighting for their life and for justice as well. So this tribunal that we've been watching, yes, of course, there are lots of commentary. There's lots of commentary on the side about whether the interpretation is right or not. Well, I suppose because it's serious, you know. If things are not interpreted properly, then it could mean something completely different. So I'd love to hear from you, 086-000-0959.
you missed it live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.